home, resting at the end of this joyous Christmas day, think of us here in this dank and squalid radio studio, slaving away with no surcease from our labors, no holiday.
Jimmy.
While the nation celebrates, we toil.
Mr. Wallington.
If you ask who is responsible for our horrible plight this Christmas night,
Mr. Wallington.
Here he is, Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, look, before we start, Mr. Wallington, if you have any grievances to air, kindly take them up with me after the show. Don't...
Well, I think it's a shame after
all...
Well,
now, there is a time and place for everything, Jimmy. Now, don't be a schlemiel.
No man can call me a schlemiel. Not at what I get.
You're not walking out on us, Mr. Wallington.
No, I'm not walking out, but I won't say another word tonight.
James Wallington has just given his Christmas gift to the world, ladies and gentlemen. And now... hello, Kenny.
Hi, fellas. What's perking?
Well, we took down the no perking sign. The perking is over. Monotonous, huh? The perking's over. Mr. Wallington has just apparently come to a boil.
You mean about working on Christmas?
Yes, Mr. Wallington is in a huff with a belt in the back. We just had words. What is radio coming to, Kenny, when a comedian can't even call an announcer a schlemiel?
Oh, but this is Christmas, F.A. Everybody is supposed to be friendly. You and Jimmy ought to make up. Hey, Jimmy.
Now, let him alone, Kenny.
Yes, what is it, Kenny?
Mr. Allen's going to take back that schlemiel.
Oh, let's get on with the show. Now,
oh,
don't...
but this is Christmas, F.A.
Well, all right. I won't defy the Yule tradition. Jimmy... I take back that schlemiel.
Thanks, Fred.
Fine. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Well, Mr. Allen.
Yes?
Remember 2 weeks ago you called me a nudnik?
Yes?
Well?
Well, you want me to take that back now, too?
If it's not too much trouble.
Well, all right, Kenny. I take back that nudnik.
Gee, thanks, F.A.
Now, all right, it's Christmas Day. Are we all merry?
Oh, F.A.
Yes, Kenny.
Now that I'm not a nudnik anymore...
Yeah?
Can I be a schlemiel?
Yes, Kenny, with my blessings, you are now a full-fledged schlemiel.
Yee-hoo! Today I am a schlemiel.
And going from the nudnik to the schlemiel, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents its highlight from the world of news. New York City, New York. The outstanding municipal event of the past week in New York City was the formal opening of the new 6th Avenue subway. Impressive ceremonies in presence of Mayor LaGuardia and other dignitaries added color to opening of newest link in the city-owned subway system. Tonight, Texaco News presents several little-known people who bring you some interesting trivia on the new 6th Avenue subway. Now first, a freelance statistician, Purvis Preen. You have some data on the new subway, Mr. Preen?
I got the figures right here.
Can we have them?
Yeah, as soon as I get them out, I got them here in my coat someplace. Where'd I put them figures?
There's a lump in your side pocket there.
Well, that's a mouse trap.
Oh, a mouse?
Yeah, I got mice in my overcoat. I gotta carry a mouse trap.
Oh, where'd I
put them figures?
There's a bulge in your back pocket there.
Oh, that's my union suit. It keeps creeping up.
Oh, getting altitude, huh? I see.
Here's the figures. In with this racing form.
Oh, you have a hobby, too. Well, now let's have the figures, if you don't mind.
All right. The new 6th Avenue subway runs from Washington Square to 50th Street. It costs $60 million.
Yes?
During the coming year, the subway expects to carry 40 million passengers.
40 million at a nickel a head? That's $2 million.
Yeah. The city's losing 58 million bucks.
Well, as a statistician, Mr. Preen, what is your personal opinion of the new subway as an investment?
Well, I would say it's vice versa.
Well, how do you mean?
The subway's a hole in the city, and the city's in the hole.
Thank you very much, Mr. Preen. A subway builder who didn't make the 6th Avenue subway, but who gives his opinion of subways in general, is one Bremson Grime. How long have you been building subways, Mr. Grime?
Man and boy, I've been in the subway game 40 years.
Both of you, hey? You don't say.
Well, invented the first subway.
Really?
Yep, I got the idea from a gopher.
A gopher, Bramson?
Yeah. I seen a gopher burrowing into the ground. I said to myself, if that little gopher can make a hole in the ground, Bramson Grime, so can you.
And you started making holes in the ground.
Yeah. At first, it was only a hobby. Then I worked it up into a business.
Well, how did you make a subway in those days, Mr. Grime?
Well, I used to harness about 2,000 gophers. I'd get behind them with a big whip, yell, giddy-up, and into the ground we'd go.
Well, wasn't it rather haphazard building subways that way?
Yeah, I never could tell where my subway was coming out.
I see.
Well, take the time I started building that hole to Jersey.
From New York to Jersey City?
Yeah, I was underground 4 days. Came up in a lady's backyard in Hoboken.
You came up with 2,000 gophers in a woman's backyard in Hoboken? Well, what did you do?
Nothing. I tipped my hat, said, excuse me, lady, turned my gophers around, yelled, tally-ho, and back we went into the ground.
You started burrowing again?
2 days later, I come out in Jersey City.
What do you know?
Today, that hole is known as the Hudson Tunnel.
What do you think has been your outstanding subway job to date, Mr. Grime?
Oh, 1913, the mayor of New York sent for me. I made the Brooklyn subway.
Good for you.
The people in New York owe me a debt of gratitude to this day.
Why?
Thanks to me, people can go from New York to Brooklyn without being seen.
Well, thank you. A young lady who became famous overnight as a result of her initial ride in the new subway is, what is your name, miss?
Babette Wasservogel.
Babette Wasservogel. And what is your claim to fame, Babette?
I was the first lady to get a seat on the new Sixth Avenue sub.
First lady to get a seat. Well, how did this happen?
Well, for 18 years, I've been living in the Bronx and working at Macy's.
Yeah?
Half of my life is spent in the subway.
And you never get a seat?
Every day, it's the same routine. I stand in the subway going to Macy's. I stand all day in Macy's. I stand in the subway coming home from Macy's.
You are going through life erect.
My lap is only a memory.
And in 18 years, no one has ever offered you a seat in the subway.
Well, a couple of times a man has pointed out a seat and raced me for it.
But you've never won?
Nah, I weaken in the stretch.
Oh, what a kid. I'll remember that when the pari mutuels return. Well, tell me, how did you happen to get the seat that made you famous?
Well, it was the second day the Sixth Avenue subway was open. Everybody was nervous, you know, trying to put the subway over.
They were afraid it might flop, huh?
Yeah. Well, I finally gets on a train and it's jammed. I got me arms full of bundles.
Yeah?
All the ladies are standing, as usual.
As usual.
All of a sudden, a guy stands up and says, lady, won't you take my seat?
Why, it must have been a shock.
I fainted.
You don't say.
I finally come to and I says, thank you for the seat, mister.
Yes?
The guy fainted.
And you?
I sat down.
Thank you very much for a most thrilling story, Miss Babette Wasservogel. The busiest man at the opening of the Sixth Avenue subway was Leonardo Schlepp. You were on the go. You were on the go, were you, Leonardo?
I didn't get to bed for 3 nights.
Before the subway opened?
Yeah, I'm at 14th Street, 23rd Street, 34th Street. I'm working day and night. It was the toughest subway job I ever done.
Well, what is it you do in subways, Leonardo?
Well, I do freelance muraling.
Freelance muraling?
Yeah.
You're an artist, huh?
Yeah, I do retouch work mostly.
Well, how do you mean retouch work?
Well, say an artist paints a girl's face, like a toothpaste there in the subway.
Yeah?
I come along and draw a mustache on the girl.
I see.
Yeah, if it's a little kid sitting in a bathtub, I draw a big nose on the kid.
You do?
Yeah, on Elsie the cow, I might draw milk dripping.
Oh, so you're the guy.
Yeah, I got exhibitions all over. The BMT, the IRT. They call me the Catacomb Rembrandt.
Small, vicious circle, I imagine.
Yeah.
And you say you worked pretty hard on the new subway, Leonardo?
I'm all in. I ought to take a rest, but I gotta keep going.
Well, what are you working on now?
Well, there's a blank space at 33rd Street, and I'm writing a poem for it.
Oh, you're going to write a poem in on the wall at 34th Street?
Yeah.
A subway poem? What is it called?
The Subway.
Oh, what a twist you've put on it.
Yeah.
How does your subway poem go, Leonardo?
Well, here it is. What is the subway? LaGuardia's pride. It's a crack in the ground through which people ride. It's bustle and bedlam, torn pants and dresses, third rails and slugs and Bronx Park expresses. That is the subway. It takes us to work. Rich man and poor man, wise guy and jerk.
Well, thank you very much. Gentlemen, Kenny Baker comes to his personal microphone to sing for you Cantique de Noël.
You've outdone yourself tonight. You have...
Well, I sure hope Grandpa heard me up on his Christmas tree.
Oh, your grandfather is on his Christmas tree, Kenny?
Yeah, he's hanging on the top branch right next to the popcorn ball.
Oh, your grandfather hung himself up for the present, huh?
No, this was an accident, kind of.
Oh, really?
Grandpa was stringing the colored lights on the tree last night, and the one at top wouldn't light up.
And?
Grandpa climbed up to see what was the matter. He took out the bulb and stuck his finger in the socket.
Uh-huh.
He can't get it out.
Oh.
Grandpa's still hanging there. Poor Gramps.
Yes, Kenny, that bulb was a dud. But your grandfather's not the only man who found a dud bulb on his Christmas tree, Kenny. For further details, I refer you now to James Wallington, M.D., Master of Duds.
Yes, many persons decorating the Christmas tree last night probably found a few bulbs that wouldn't light up. They were duds. And there are duds of another kind, too. Worthless, slow-action elements in gasoline that fail to vaporize and go off completely in the cylinders of your car, causing sputtering starts, slow warm-ups, bucking and stalling. But you're not getting duds when you buy Fire Chief gasoline. Texaco refining removes the duds completely. The duds are out. That's why Fire Chief gives you flashing, brilliant performance. Fast start, quick warm-up, economical mileage. So next time, try Texaco Fire Chief. Remember, at regular gasoline prices, it's all action. Not a dud in a tank full.
Maestro Goodman and his Jolly Jivers have just played a medley. Three blind mice, Mary had a little lamb, and in and out the window. Say, how come, Maestro Goodman, you're playing three numbers in one this evening?
Can I help it? The music is stuck together.
Well, how could your music get stuck together?
Before the program is starting, I, Goodman, am rehearsing.
Yes.
In one hand, I'm conducting with a baton.
So?
In the other hand, I'm holding in my mouth a lollipop.
A lollipop? Well, I know, but...
Suddenly, I, Goodman, am getting excited. Why? Who knows?
Well, what happened?
My hands I am mistaking. The baton I am sticking in my mouth, and with the lollipop I am conducting.
I see. Too bad you didn't have another arm. You could have taken care of all the things you mentioned in there. I see. So with the lollipop, conducting with the lollipop and the baton in your mouth, when you went to turn over the music, your hand was sticky.
That's my story, and I'm stuck with it. Also the music.
Well, fine. I'm glad to know that.
If you want to lick the music, it's peppermint. Delicious.
No thanks. No thanks. I'm on a diet. 2 weeks ago, I gained 3 pounds just listening to one chorus of Sweet Sue. Say, oh, hello, Portland.
Hello.
I didn't see it coming. Say, you look a little tired tonight.
Yes, I haven't been home for 2 days. I went to see your new picture.
And it took you 2 days?
Yes. I got in line Monday afternoon at the corner of 41st Street and 7th Avenue.
Well, what took you 2 days?
Well, part of the line got pushed into a bus station on 41st Street.
No kidding.
The next thing I knew, I was in Hackensack.
Well, did you finally see Love Thy Neighbor?
Yes.
Well?
Jack got the girl at the finish, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, I got paid.
Wasn't Jack on the screen longer than you?
No, it only seemed longer than...
Do you think you and and Jack will ever make another picture?
Not me. I was hoodwinked into this one.
Well, how?
Well, when I got out to Hollywood, I found out that the producer of the picture was Benny's uncle. The director of the picture was Benny's cousin. The cameraman, Irving, was Benny's nephew. And when the picture was finished, I was informed that Benny's father, who is a tailor, was going to cut the picture. So, if you see the picture again and it looks like a sleeve, you'll know whose fault it is. Now, before I get good and mad, what about our guests?
Well, this is Christmas night, and everybody is sitting around the house stuffed with turkey.
So?
So I thought people might like to hear about another kind of stuffing for a change.
And our guest tonight?
He's a sausage stuffer.
A sausage stuffer?
Yes. Mr. Allen, meet Mr. Otto Hottendorf.
Well, good evening, Mr. Hottendorf.
Good evening, Fred.
You, Mr. Hottendorf, are a bona fide bologna stuffer.
That's right, Fred. I've been stuffing bologna for 13 years.
And where do you practice this unique art?
I work at the Armor and Company plant in Jersey City.
Well, tell me, Mr. Hottendorf, how did you ever come to make worst taxidermy your life's work?
Well, when I was a young fella, I got a job at Armwood. I started off helping around the grinding machine and finally worked my way up to bologna stuffing.
Well, after 13 years, I imagine you stuff a beautiful bologna, Mr. Well, does the Armour plant turn out other elongated knickknacks besides bologna?
Yes. Armour makes about 5,000 meat items, Fred, including a lot of byproducts.
Byproducts?
Yes. They make buttons, cones, violin strings, and many other things.
Well, you never get confused over at your plant, do you, Mr. Hottendorf?
How do you mean, Fred?
Well, it might be pretty embarrassing one day if your deliveries got mixed up and a delicatessen suddenly received 10 pounds of fiddle strings, and Heifetz found himself playing humoresque on a salami.
We don't make mistakes at Armour, Fred.
Oh, excuse me. Toujours l'amour, hey? Well, do you work on these, excuse me, my tongue is a little greasy. It slipped out, Mr. Hottendorf. Do you work on these other items, or do you just concentrate on bologna?
Well, there are dozens of different kinds of bologna, Fred. I work on all of them.
Well, I thought no matter how you sliced it, bologna was still bologna.
You're wrong, Fred. There's ham bologna, beef bologna, salami, liverwurst, bratwurst, knockwurst, stockwurst, pinkerwurst, getwurst.
Now, wait a minute, just a minute. You win, Mr. Hottendorf. I gave up around pinkerwurst. But tell me, how do you go about conjuring up one of your bloated snacks? Now, what happens before you personally do your stuff?
Well, before the meat reaches me, it's prepared for stuffing by special grinding and cutting men. It has to be chopped very fine.
Bologna, then, is really just hamburger with a girdle on. Well, tell me now, what happens next?
Well, when the meat comes to me, I load up my machine with it.
Yes?
I take a casing. That's the skin a bologna comes in.
Uh-huh.
And put it over a nozzle on top of the machine.
Yes?
Then I turn on the machine, and the air pressure forces the meat into the casing.
Until it has a skin full, huh? Well, it's practically all machine work, isn't it?
Not all, Fred. I still have to tie the bologna in the right places. A machine couldn't do that.
Well, just now, how do you apply those delicatessen tourniquets, Mr. Hottendorf? Do you employ a sailor's knot or a running noose? Or do you use the old reliable Dr. Kildare ligature?
No, there's no fancy work. I just pull a cord good and tight around the bologna.
I see. And now, as an authority on bologna, Mr. Hottendorf, I wish you would answer one question for me.
What is that, Fred?
Now, is it possible to slice a bologna so as to get the slices evenly between two hunks of bread?
How do you mean?
Well, whenever I slice a bologna, I either put two slices in side by side, which leaves a big gap of bread in the middle, or I cram in three or four slices of bologna, one on top of the other, and get a lump in the middle of the sandwich that springs my jaw. Now, what can I do about this gastronomic dilemma, Mr. Hottendorf?
The perfect solution for you is the new square bolognese.
Square bolognese?
Yes. For the past 3 or 4 years, Armour's has been making a square bologna which fits evenly between two slices of bread.
A square bologna. Well, destiny has finally shaped the bologna's end. Well, this has been a very interesting glimpse into the art of meat upholstery and all of its sidelines, Mr. Hottendorf. And I think that we both deserve to be complimented on a remarkable radio accomplishment.
What's that, Fred?
Well, we've been talking about bologna stuffing for 7 minutes, and neither of us has once tried to make a joke out of, "That's a lot of bologna." Now, that is a new high in broadcasting restraint, Mr. Hottendorf, and I want to be the first to congratulate you.
Thanks, Fred.
Now, before you go, I think it might be nice if we summed up the facts on your personal worst inflating career. Now, you say you've been stuffing bolognese for 13 years?
That's right.
And about how many bolognese do you stuff a day?
I average about 14,000 pounds a day. That's around 3,200 bolognese.
Well, 30 at around, they run about a foot and a half each. You stuff then 4,800 feet of bologna a day. Now, there are 300 working days approximately in the year for you. 300 times 4, 4,800. At times 13 years, that's 4,800. Why, Mr. Hottendorf, do you realize that in your lifetime you have stuffed almost 18,720,000 feet of bologna?
That sure is a lot of bologna, Fred.
There you go! Off. Well, I guess you just couldn't hold out. But thanks a lot, old man, for trying.
Good night, Fred.
Good night, and thank you. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the Martins. Their song, "The Toy Trumpet." Oh, yes, sir.
I got something for you outside. Hey, bring in them sacks, Joe.
Okay, Matt.
Watch it. Take it easy now.
Hey, where do you want me to put these down, Alan?
Say, his face looks familiar, this fella. I'd swear I've seen him on another delivery truck. Say, what are all these sacks? What in the world is in these things here?
45,000 telegrams, brother.
45,000 telegrams for me?
Yeah, they're from Texaco dealers all over the country. Sign here, please. Sign here and here and here.
Now,
and all
just
down.
A minute. Just a minute. You're too militant for a little man. Now, let me read one of these and find out what this is all about. Fred Allen, please extend to your audience my sincere wish for a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Signed, a Texaco dealer.
Here's another one.
A Merry Christmas to the motoring public, and may the friendly, cheerful service of Texaco dealers continue to spread some of the Christmas spirit through the whole year.
Keep going, brother. You only got 44,998 more.
Oh, now, look. I appreciate the spirit behind these telegrams, but if I try to read them all now, my astigmatism is going to have bunions on it. Can't we boil all these wires down to a digest, a message?
Such as what?
You're asking that you really want to know?
Yes, sir.
Well, the simplest and best holiday greeting in the world, friends. All the telegrams, all the tinsel and holly and red ribbon in existence cannot say more than this. Ladies and gentlemen, 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast wish you a Merry Christmas. Ensemble. And now, put the bones on the side of the orchestration there, gentlemen. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Allen.
Oh, yes, Portland.
Mama told me to thank you for the lovely Christmas present you sent her.
Your mother liked that mink neck piece, huh?
Yes, all but one thing. It eats a lot.
The mink neck piece eats?
4 meals a day.
You mean they delivered a live mink to your mother?
Yes. What company would send out a live fur piece?
Well, confidentially, Portland, I bought that fur from a credit clothing company. You know, by sending out a live mink, they save time and money. Now, if I miss a payment, they don't have to send a truck and a man and waste the whole day to get the fur. You see, the man just leans out of the main office, whistles, and the mink sprints back to the warehouse.
Gosh, that's some system.
Oh, mink whistlers make big money. Oh, and beaver urgers, you know, men who urge beavers to build things. But tell me, how did you like the present I gave you?
Oh, that perfume bookmark is lovely.
Yes, it's a new idea. You know how sometimes a bookmark slips down into the book and you can't find the page?
Yes.
Well, with the perfumed bookmark, you just smell along the edge of the book until you come to the page. And, oh, by the way, thanks for your present.
Did you like it, Mr. Allen?
Oh, it was swell. You know, I've always wanted to own a copy of the Mona Lisa.
That's not a copy. That's the real thing.
Now, Portland.
That's what Mr. Goodman's brother-in-law said when he sold it to me.
Was it retouched?
No. He just cut the Coca-Cola bottle out of Mona Lisa's hand.
Coca-Cola bottle that Mona Lisa formerly held in her hand is by the picture no more. So Goodman's brother-in-law is selling fake paintings now. Why, that guy's so crooked that you've got to be cross-eyed to look him straight in the eye. Well, I'll see about this thing. Mr. Goodman, come over here, please.
I, Goodman, am aggravated.
I, Allen, have done something to offend the sticky-fingered maestro.
When Goodman gives a Christmas present to a friend who is no stranger, and the friend does not give to Goodman a Christmas present, then Goodman no longer considers the friend a friend, stranger.
I'd like to get a cheap interpreter by the hour if it could be arranged.
Goodman means you didn't give him a present.
A statement I made in plain English not 2 minutes ago.
Well, Maestro, I did give you a Christmas present.
When? This I'm asking in all sincerity.
Yesterday afternoon at rehearsal, I slipped a silk polka dot muffler into your music case.
A polka dot muffler and my music case?
What's wrong with that?
Don't you know that to a musician, a dot is a note and vice versa?
You thought that muffler was a piece of music?
A piece of music, he says. We're playing it tonight.
Well, I thought I heard a fringe in that last number. Well, look, if you don't want the muffler, I'll take it back.
Oh, my orchestra, it sounds good. Thanks very much.
And thank you for that can of tobacco with the broken seal you sent over this morning.
You liked it?
I smoked 2 pipefuls of that tobacco, and 4 moths flew out of the curtains with their little wings up in the air.
A gift horse in the mouth, you shouldn't look.
Just for that, I'm going to take back my muffler.
Who needs it? I have a long chin.
Go away, go away. Say, Portland, where's Kenny? He has a long chin. He doesn't need a muffler. You've got a Bal Brigham chin, I suppose. It keeps you warm in the winter. Where's poor Kenny, Portland?
Kenny.
It's time for a song.
Kenny's over in the corner. It's pretty low.
What's the matter with him?
Well, Dennis, they told Kenny that there isn't any Santa Claus.
No Santa Claus? Why, Kenny's little toy world must have toppled.
Quiet. He's coming, Mr. Allen.
Hello, Kenny.
Hello, F.A.
Well, how does Santa Claus treat you this year, Kenny, my little man?
Santa Claus. Horse feathers.
See, Mr. Allen? Dennis Day did that to Kenny.
You bet. Dennis Day is one smart kid. He knows what time it is.
Oh, now, look, Kenny.
You gotta get up pretty early in the morning to put one over on Dennis.
But, Kenny...
That Dennis knows everything about everything.
Meaning?
There ain't no Santa Claus, brother, and you know it.
No Santa Claus, he says. Then who was it sitting there on the 4th floor at Macy's? Mr. Bloomingdale, maybe?
Some corny actor in white whiskers. That's who was sitting there, Mr. Gullible Goodman.
You see what Dennis did, Mr. Allen?
Now, easy, Kenneth, old man.
Boy, was I a chump. Being a good boy. Writing letters to the North Pole. Airmail yet. Leaving a hot lunch next to the fireplace every Christmas. Santa Claus.
Now look, Kenneth. Millions of people believe in Santa Claus.
Listen, F.A., you're not pulling a bull over my eyes.
Why, Kenneth, I could get hundreds of kiddies to swear that last night they saw a sled drawn by reindeer flying through the air, piloted by a man in red clothing.
Oh, that. Dennis and I saw that man in the sky.
Well, that was Santa Claus.
Then what was he doing spelling out I.J. Fox?
I give
Mr. Allen.
It's no use, Porty. Thanks to Dennis, I've seen the light.
Kenny, didn't you hang up your stocking last night?
Yes.
And when you woke up this morning, wasn't your stocking filled with goodies?
Yes.
Who do you think filled your stocking with all those goodies?
Dennis says it's a new deal.
That is silly.
Yes. Ask Dennis how the new deal can get into your stocking when it can't even get into Maine and Vermont.
Mr. Allen's right, Kenny.
Now, look, all of you, I'm going to explain this thing. Gather around. I, Goodman, and everyone. Now, look. Santa Claus is a symbol. The symbol of a spirit. Now, you all receive presents today. You don't get presents at any other time of the year, do you? Someone is responsible for those presents. You see my point, Portland?
Yes, I believe in Santa Claus.
Well, how about you, Mr. Goodman?
There must be a Santa Claus. Goodman is working.
What about you, Kenny?
Well, I guess Dennis was wrong about Santa Claus, Mr. Allen.
Well, of course he was. Now, you ought to assert yourself, Kenny.
That's right. You bet. I will assert myself. I'm pretty tired of being a stooge for Dennis Day. Say, that guy couldn't convince me of anything anymore, trying to top me off as Santa Claus.
Good.
I'm going to tell him off right now.
Good.
What are you going to do, Kenny?
Hand me that phone, Porty.
Uh-huh.
Thanks.
Take it easy, Kenny.
Hello, operator. I want to talk to Dennis Day. He's with the Jack Benny program. I don't know the number, but they're in New York. They're stopping at Mulligan's Little Heaven Trailer Camp.
Now, look, don't lose your temper. Don't bawl Dennis out, Kenny. Just restore his faith in Santa Claus, and you will have done a good deed.
Okay, Mr. Allen. Hello, Dennis? Say, you were all wrong about Santa. Now, listen, What? No kidding. Holy smokes! I'll be right over.
Kenny, where are you going?
I gotta see Dennis right away.
Why?
He just got some dope on the stork.
Kenny Baker, you come back here and sing your song. No Santa Claus. The next thing Dennis Day will tell you, there's no Major Bowes.
Kenny Baker just sung A Nightingale Sang in Barclay Square.
Oh, say, Fred, I'm a little late, but I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Well, thanks, Larry Elliott, and a Happy Yule to you. Did the gentleman... Did the gentleman with the white muff do right by you this year?
You bet he did, Fred. You know, I was listening to what you were telling Kenny a little while ago about Santa Claus.
Yeah?
Wouldn't it be swell if we could go back to the days when we were kids and really believed Santa brought our presents?
Oh, and those presents we used to get, Larry. Gee, I'll never forget the year Santa brought me that bottle of liniment and a bicycle.
Yeah, I got a bicycle one year, too. I could do all kinds of tricks on it.
Oh, me too. Under the name of St. Ange, I played 20 weeks for Pantages years ago as a child.
Well, could you ride your bike with no hands, Fred?
Not only no hands, Larry. After the kids in the next block got around to me, I was riding no bicycle. But getting that bike for Christmas was a thrill, nevertheless.
Yes, and think of the thousands of youngsters who had that thrill this very morning, Fred. The gift of a new, smooth-running bicycle.
And the head waiter were fired.
This is the night of December 25th, 1940. As the professors of Metropolis University finish their annual dinner at the faculty club, they little dream that the shadow of death hovers grim and black over their banquet table. Coffee is served, cigars are lighted, and the dean rises to introduce the president emeritus of the university.
Order, order, gentlemen, please. Members of the Metropolis faculty club. It gives me great pleasure to introduce our beloved President Emeritus, a man who has spoken at every function Metropolis University has held for the past 30 years. I give you our perennial after-dinner orator, Dr. Phineas B. Dahl, Dr. Dahl.
Thank you, faculty brothers, thank you. Tonight, as I gaze around this distinguished assemblage, I am reminded of a story. There were two Irishmen, Patrick and Michael. Patrick said to Michael, "Vigore, Andy Dallas."
20 minutes later, Dr. Dull is still telling his story.
And then Michael said to Patrick, "Vigore, Andy Dallas."
35 minutes later, Dr. Dull is still telling his story.
And then Patrick replied, be gory and be jabbered.
1 hour and 10 minutes later, Dr. Dull is still telling the same story.
And then Patrick and Michael said to each other, be gory and be jabbered.
Be gory and be jabbered.
And Dr. Dull is finished before his story. The dean summons the police. Who will solve this crime? Will it be the FBI? Will it be Superman? Will it be Inspector Bungo?
Hello? Yes, this is the FBI. A murder? You got the wrong FBI, buddy. This is Flugelman's Bagel Institute. So long.
Superman's office. It's a boat. It's a plane. It's Superman's super secretary talking. Sorry, Superman can't take the case. He just had a nervous breakdown. Yeah, Superman went nuts trying to tear the cellophane off a pack of cigarettes. So long.
Hiya, party. Yeah, this is Inspector Bungo Gavin. A murder at the Metropolis Faculty Club? Yeah, I can take the case. Well, I was due at a gangbusters rehearsal, but I can get Warden Dawes to stand in for me. Okay, I'll be right over. This is Inspector Bungo talking. Don't nobody move.
Inspector Bungo, at last...
Don't nobody move. I got just covered like a hockey player's shins. Don't nobody move.
For heaven's sake, Inspector, I'm the only one here and I'm not moving.
Oh, excuse me, bud. That's me opening line on gangbusters. I thought I was back on the program.
Well, this isn't a radio show, Bungo. This is murder.
Hey, a lot of radio shows is murder, bud. Who are you?
I am Dr. Erwin Flunk, Dean of Metropolis University.
Yeah? Well, who's this guy at the banquet table with his head in the finger bowl?
That's the body, the late Dr. Phineas B. Dull.
Eh? Who killed him?
Nobody knows. We were having the annual faculty banquet.
A banquet, eh?
Yes.
What was the entree?
Fried fillet of sole.
With lemon?
No, sauté.
I like it better with lemon.
I like it better sauté.
Well, I like it better...
Well, I know,
just
but...
a minute. Now, where was we?
There's been a murder.
Who's this guy with his noggin in the digit basin?
That's the body, remember?
Oh, that's right. Now, who bumped him off? What happened?
Well, after dinner, I introduced Dr. Dull. He got up and started telling a story. Three shots rang out, and Dr. Dull fell over dead.
I know. One of the guests must have done it. I'm grilling the guest. Hand me a guest.
With lemon?
Yeah, I like it with lemon.
I like it better sauteed.
Well, I like it better... Now, hey, wait a minute. There we go again. Bungle ain't cooking no meal. Bungle's solving this murder.
I give up. I confess. I'm guilty.
Professor Borax, you?
Yes, I, Professor Alan Borax. I killed Dr. Phineas B. Dull.
Oh, yeah? That's only one man's opinion, bud. Why did you kill him, Whiskers?
It was that confounded Iris story. Begorra and bejabbers. For 30 years, that old fossil has told that same story. I couldn't stand it anymore. Tonight, I stopped it.
Oh, yeah? I'm Detective Bungo, bud.
Take me away, Bungo.
Not so fast, Whiskers. How do I know you killed Dr. Dull?
Professor Borax has confessed, Bungo.
Yes, I'm guilty.
Yeah? How do I know you ain't confessing just to get on we the people?
Why, I've got my gun here. It's still smoking.
That's good enough for Bungo. I arrest you, Professor Borax, for the murder of Phineas B. Dull.
I give up. I confess. I did it.
You done what, lady?
I shot Dr. Dull.
Dean Witherspoon, you?
Yes, it was that begotta and bejabba story. I couldn't bear it. I killed him. Here's my gun.
I give up. I can't stand it. I confess. I did it.
You confess what, bud?
I shot Dr. Dull.
Professor Toad!
Hey, what is this? A mystery or the goodwill court?
But I tell you, I killed him.
No, I did it.
I did it.
No, it was...
Quiet, quiet, quiet. bungle settling this once and for all.
What are you going to do?
I'll find out who's guilty. Ibbity, bibbity, sibbity, sap. Ronald Trance and Dorful Nap. Hiking, kibby, sleet, and snow. Eeny, meeny, miny, what do you know?
It came out on you, Bungle.
Yeah, okay, you're under arrest, Bungle. Oh, me? Yeah, you, Bungle. I ain't done nothing. You're coming with me. Let go of my collar. You're going quiet? You're going to come with me? Come on, Bungle, let's go.
Well, wait a minute. You couldn't have committed the murder, Bungle. You weren't even here.
Hey, that's right. Turn me loose, Bungle. Okay, Bungle, I will.
But I tell you, I committed the murder with this gun.
I committed the murder with this gun.
Gentlemen, please. I have a gun, too.
Oh, yeah? And none of yous ain't guilty.
What?
There ain't no bullet holes in the body at all.
But all three of us fired.
And all three of yous missed.
Well, bless my test tubes, then we're all innocent.
That's terrible.
I thought I'd put an end to that vigari and be jabbing.
Come on, come on, come on. Break it up, you three poofs. Get over in the corner and sit down. Bungle's solving this crime. Bungle.
Well, but if nobody shot the doctor, what killed him?
Bungle's got the solution, Dean Flunk. The noise of them shots give the old guy a heart attack. That bumped him off.
Oh, that's impossible. Dr. Dull never even heard those shots.
Why not?
Dr. Dull has been stone deaf for 30 years.
Deaf, eh? Well, that's funny.
What's funny about that?
When I was frisking the body for them bullet holes, I found this piece of paper. The name on it says Erasmus Drum.
Erasmus Drum? Well, he's in the faculty club tonight. I saw him in the chess room before the banquet started.
Well, get him up here. What are we waiting for? Call him on the house phone.
All right, I will. Hello? Page Erasmus Drum, please. Have him come to the banquet hall at once, please.
That's more like it. The mystery solved, Dean Flunk.
You mean Erasmus Drum committed this murder, Bungle?
This piece of paper tells the story, Bud. Here he is now. Come in.
Who is Inspector Bungle?
I am,
Bud. Well, what the devil do you mean by ruining my chess game?
Are you Erasmus Drum, Bud?
I am Dr. Erasmus Drum, the famous air specialist. And I'll trouble you to see me by appointment, sir.
Oh, yeah? Dean Flunk? Meet the man who killed Dr. Phineas B. Dull.
I killed...
Ridiculous, Bungle. Dr. Drum wasn't even in the banquet room.
Of course not. I've been in the chess room all evening trying to rook my opponent's bishop.
Oh, yeah? Well, Dr. Dull is dead, Bud.
Dead? Why, Dr. Dull was in my office only this afternoon.
Right. When I found your bill for services rendered on the corpus's body, I knew you killed him.
Killed him? Why, today, after 30 years of intensive air treatments, I finally cured Dr. Phineas B. Dull of his chronic deafness. That's what that bill is for.
I know. And in curing the old guy of his deafness, Doc, you killed him.
But how could I?
For 30 years, Dr. Dull was telling that corny Irish story that went on for hours. For 30 years, it drove everybody else nuts. But he was deaf and couldn't hear it. Tonight, for the first time in 30 years, he heard his own after-dinner speech. That's how he was killed.
You mean
Dr. Phineas B. Dull bored himself to death. Begorra and bejabers.
Thank you. We're a little late, ladies and gentlemen. A happy new year to you all. This is Fred Allen saying good night for the more than 45,000 Texaco dealers from coast to coast. Good night.